This is the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks on KQV with expert advice from CPA, attorney, and retirement and estate planning expert Jim Lang, the best-selling author of Retire Secure and The Roth Revolution. Pay taxes once and never again. Now on the air and online worldwide at retiresecure.com. Get ready to talk smart money. Here's Jim Lang.
Hello and welcome to the Lang Money Hour. We are talking smart money tonight with retirement and estate planning expert Jim Lang, who's also the author of two editions of Retire Secure and The Roth Revolution. Tonight he's joined by Dr. Jeff Considine. Jeff, are you on the line?
I am.
Wonderful. Welcome. Jeff joins us from Colorado tonight, where he is the president and founder of Quantext and the author of The Survival Guide for a Post-Pension World. Jeff is an expert in asset management, analytics, and research, so he is the perfect guest to join us tonight as we talk about safe withdrawal rates when planning for your retirement.
And I'd like to start with something that I've actually never done before, which is actually having either a correction or addition from a prior show. The last show, we had a guy named Sandy Botkin on, and he did a very nice job talking about he's actually a former IRS agent and a CPA and an attorney, and he talked a lot about the different tax saving tips, and I thought he was a very good guest. But he's also a big fan of people. He likes for people to start their own little side business and eventually even have their side business be their main business. And that's fine. You know, the world of authors, which is frankly usually the type of people I get as guests because they're experts and they have something to say, but some of them are a little bit outrageous. And Sandy said something that really was outrageous, and I didn't call him on it. By the way, it happens a lot when I think later on, oh, gee, I should have said this, I should have said that. But he said something that I really should not have let go, but I did. he wants everybody to develop their own business, and he said something like, well, if you have your job, spend as little time as possible. Just do whatever you can just to get by while you're developing your side business, and just do just enough to not get fired. And then I made a joke, well, that doesn't apply to my employees. And that's all well and good, but really what I should have said is no, Sandy, there's a lot of people, in fact, I would say the majority of the listeners, who they might have put in 20, 30 years or they're still working, and they take a lot of pride in what they do, and they do a good job, and they do something useful for society, which is frankly the most of my friends, acquaintances, clients, and the vast majority of people I run into. And there are people, you know, like me who are self-employed. Some people would say that we're self-employed because we're unemployable. But in either case, I shouldn't have let him get away with that, and I'm going to have a rare correction where I can really say, well, no, I disagree. If you have a job, and let's even say that you drink Sandy's Kool-Aid and you think, oh, someday I'll go out on my own and figure out my own business. Well, that's fine. But in the meantime, while you have your job, do a good job. And then at some point, if you go out on your own, give your employer sufficient notice and then go out on your own. If you're going to stay with your employer, then you owe it to him, frankly, yourself and your own clients and people that you run into through your work to do the best job. So anyway, I wanted to get that out of the way because that bothered me. All right, anyway, back to Jeff. Jeff, are you still here?
I sure am.
Okay. Jeff, this show was advertised as a safe withdrawal show, and I know that you have other areas of expertise, and in fact, in your book, Safe Withdrawals was only one section. On the other hand, when you type in safe withdrawal rates in Google, you're all over the place, and you have articles, and you've obviously been writing about it, and I think that is a component of your software. So could you start with, let's just say, the basics on what do people mean, or what do advisors mean when they talk about the safe withdrawal rate? And is that your definition? Whatever you think the standard definition is that your definition also? So what is the safe withdrawal rate?
Okay, that's a great place to start. And by the way, thanks for having me on. The whole debate about safe withdrawal rates is really a consequence of the move from traditional pensions to defined contribution pensions, where you're going to be living on what you've managed to save and invest over your lifetime. And what the, where the challenge comes in is you've spent your whole life working and saving and investing, and you come up on retirement, and you have a portfolio of assets. And people need to try to figure out how much money they can safely plan on drawing each year to be able to sustain a long-term income in retirement. And so that's really the definition of a safe withdrawal rate is basically just how much money you can plan on drawing based upon the size of your portfolio for the balance of your life with an acceptable probability of running out of money.
All right. Now one question that I get about safe withdrawal rates, and you know whether we use 4% or 5%, and we'll get into that later. People say, well, does that mean that if I spend 4%, and let's just use $1 million because it's a nice round number, so you have $1 million portfolio, and somebody says, well, does that mean that if I take out $40,000 per year that I'm going to die with $1 million, or does that mean that I'm going to be able to spend $40,000 a year and I should include inflation in that? And then when I die, there's nothing left.
Okay, good question, and your later clarification was crucial. Where the 4% rule comes from, which is what you happen to refer to, is based on the idea, if I retire with $1 million, the 4% rule says, well, I can draw $40,000 my first year in retirement, and then escalate that amount by 3% to keep up with inflation for the rest of my life, and I will have a high probability of being able to sustain that income for the balance of my life. But no, you should not plan on retiring with $1 million. That's basically including, it requires that you have the possibility of spending $1 million. Not that you will, or not that you will on average, but you have a good chance of spending down the entire balance.
All right, so the safe withdrawal rate is not really a rate designed to pass money on to your heirs. It's really just to make sure that you will have sufficient money to live during your lifetime. Is that correct?
Well, let me clarify, though, because this is a really important point. On average, if you follow the 4% rule, if you draw that amount, you will have a fairly substantial estate at your death. The 4% rule, though, is based on the worst-case scenario, or the worst cases. So the idea is that, on average, you have money, left a pretty substantial estate left, but you need to plan for the bad scenarios, and so there is a meaningful probability that you will draw down your entire portfolio. But no, you will have, you should expect to leave a substantial bequest, and substantial is as a fraction of what you retire with.
Okay, now let's say for discussion's sake that we had somebody that retired in 2008 with his $1 million, and then all of a sudden, boom, you know, the market, he loses a substantial amount in the market. And he's probably, if he's going to, let's say, stay with that 4% rate, he's probably not going to leave a substantial amount of money. In fact, does he even have a problem doing the 4%?
Okay. Very good question. So you have someone who retires before the crash, and let's say they retire with $1 million. They're planning on pulling that $40,000 a year, inflation adjusted, for the rest of their lives. After 2008, if they just continue to draw that amount, they have a very high probability of failure, of not being able to fund their long-term retirement.
All right, but the 4% withdrawal rate does anticipate the possibility that we're going to have another 2008, we're going to have another, in effect, crash, and that presumably is built into those numbers, because on average, the investments have certainly done better than 4% over time, and in addition, if people got the average rate, if you will, and it was more than 4%, and they just drew their 4%, then they would end up dying with their $1 million and more. But what you're saying is the safe withdrawal rate is 4%. Because you have to take into account the fact that you're going to have at least the possibility of those down years.
Right. And that's a really important point, is there's an awful lot of calculators floating around, including on the web, that ignore investment risk. So they treat your portfolio as though if you think your portfolio is going to make 7% a year, they treat your portfolio as though it will earn 7% every year. And so, of course, you could draw more than 4% in that situation. The problem is that returns for any portfolio that's a mix of fixed income and equities are somewhat volatile. And so there will be situations where you will be drawing a higher fraction of your portfolio relative to its current value. So your $40,000 is 4% of what you retired with, but if your portfolio is down 20% and you draw $40,000, you're obviously drawing a proportionately higher fraction of your portfolio, which is then not there to enjoy the recovery. And so, no, it is the volatility of investments that really drives the 4% rule. If you ignore volatility, life is much easier, but the fact is you simply can't get equity-like returns without that volatility.
Okay, and by the way, I do want to get to your software solution, which I think is both unique and the next step. But before we get to that, if we could do a real quick history of the analysis, because even without your software, maybe you can't say that. Maybe that's because it's just such a integral part of the way you think and who you are. But if we could do a quick history of that analysis and to see whether you agreed with that 4% rule, let's say before you add your analysis. And I know that your analysis is not just changing the 4% number, it's actually something doing proactively regarding investments. But if we could just do a real quick history, because the other thing is, as I mentioned to you earlier, that Bill Bengen, who I think was one of the pioneers in this area, and I think he wrote very very articulately, and he was actually on the show, and I figured he was kind of like, well, he's kind of like the classic safe withdrawal guy, and I kind of consider you the more modern safe withdrawal guy, if that's fair. I don't know if that's fair or not. But if we could do a real quick history and then then get to what where you've taken it.
Okay. So, right, Bill Bengen was really the pioneer in this area, and I think, you know, he did some of the, if not the first, he's certainly known as being the first person to really take the volatility of the market into account in terms of calculating, say, withdrawal rate. And basically his work, and there's also a study called the Trinity Study, that used historical market data to go through and say, essentially take real sequences of market returns and say, if I retired in this year and started to draw a certain amount, how much could I safely draw? And looked at every year in history for which we have market data, and then looked at how successful you could be with a given draw rate. And basically what the early studies showed is that a 4% draw rate was sufficiently low that you would never run out of money through all the market histories for which we had data, where there was just an exceedingly low probability that we would run out of money.
Okay, now I don't mean to correct you, but this is something that I always kind of wonder about. A lot of the people that I work with are conservative by nature, and things like exceedingly low might not quite do it for them. Are you talking about 70%, 90%, 99%? And I hate to be this exact, but frankly, these are some issues that people are concerned about, because sometimes when I've even read some of the material, even some of your material, you know, it says, well, you know, if you take out this much, you have a 70% chance. And then I'm thinking, oh, that means you have a 30% chance of running out of money, which is obviously what we're trying to avoid. So if you could be a little bit more specific about that, I appreciate it.
Let me be very specific.
All right, good. I like that. I love this because, you know, it's a difference between getting a PhD who's studied this for years and years, knows what they're doing, rather than getting some joker who is just kind of making it up as he goes, or he read something and he's trying to spit it back out. But I love when you say, yes, I'm going to be very specific.
Okay. Now, again, you may have to have a correction on this because I don't remember exactly. My recollection is that in Bengen's original study, he found that a 4% withdrawal rate was absolutely safe for the historical period that he looked at. Like, you would never go broke with the 4% rule over that period.
Okay.
Now later work that attempted to incorporate more uncertainty, which is to say, to account for the fact that we, given a certain sample of history, that's not a sample, that's not representative of everything that could possibly happen. That's simply one snapshot in history. And so later work that attempted to put more statistical analysis around the historical values, in other words, more uncertainty around it, came up with results that were more like an 80% probability of being able to fund a 30 to 40 year retirement. And the numbers do vary when you go from a single period in history, which we have absolute data for, but which, you know, will probably never, history never repeats itself. So the challenge in going beyond that is to then say, okay, what can we say? So for instance, saying that something has never happened before in a 50 or 60 year market history doesn't mean it will never happen. It just means it didn't happen in that period. So if people attempted to expand the probability to cover the range of things that appeared to be possible based on the historical statistics, the probability of failure naturally rose. And so it is more common today to see probabilities of failure somewhere in the 80 to 90% range, simply because we recognize that one snapshot in history is not sufficient to say, to give the range of all possible things that could happen. And of course, the extreme case is what are referred to as black swans. You know, the fact that you've never seen a black swan doesn't mean one doesn't exist. But even without going to those really extreme events, simply looking at a given period in history doesn't give you the range of all things that are possible. It simply gives you one snapshot of what is possible.
So, for example, if you used a 30-year period, and I don't know if Bill did that or not, but if you didn't include the Depression, or, for example, most of his work was before 2008, and you didn't include that downturn, then you would obviously have a higher percentage of success, even if it's 100%, compared to taking into the possibility that, well, something that didn't happen during that period could happen, and therefore it's not as high.
Right. And what's perhaps a little more worrisome is the fact that the market evolves. The market today is not the same market that it was. And so there are people out there who believe, for instance, that given the way markets have evolved, especially with high-frequency traders and the increased influence of those kinds of players in the market, is that extreme events have actually become more probable because there are more giant leveraged players out there. And so right, I think the really big picture view from my perspective is that looking at history is a great idea. I mean, it's what we have. However, you should always assume that history is one snapshot of the possible. And in terms of building statistical models, you have to try to use history to give you a sense of going beyond simply what has happened to what might happen. And that actually leads very directly from the pure historical studies to more of the Monte Carlo studies, which is what I developed in my software and what a number of other companies have developed as well.
All right, why don't we get to, you know something?
You know what, I think this is a good point to take a break, and then when we come back, Jeff can talk about that. We are going to take a break. You're listening to the Lang Money Hour. We are live if you have any questions. 412-333-9385. We'll be right back.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
I do want to get to your Monte Carlo analysis, Jeff, in a minute, but there is something that I think it would be premature to just say the classic solution is 4%. And one of the reasons why I don't think that that's even the classic answer is because we haven't distinguished between how many years you need the money. So let's just take two people. One is maybe 60 years old, and they have $1 million, and they're in very good health, and they might live 30 years or even longer. And compare that with somebody who is perhaps 90 or 95 years old and is not in good health. Obviously, just intuitively, the 95-year-old can take a much higher withdrawal rate than 4% and never run out of money. Whereas the healthy 60-year-old has to be a little bit more conservative because he's going to live longer. If you can tell me some thoughts that you had, and then maybe we will also give the listeners some of the classic analysis that Bill Bengen did on that, and then we'll get to your Monte Carlo, if that's okay.
Sure, absolutely. Well, of course, you're correct that 4% rule is based on the idea of someone retiring today and how much they could draw as a fraction of their portfolio. The older you are, if you were to, say, be 70 and reset and say, okay, I'm going to reevaluate my draw rate, of course you'll be able to draw a higher fraction because you're looking to sustain income for a smaller number of years. The real challenge to the survival rate is all about longevity risk, and obviously the older you are, the less longevity risk you face. And in fact, one of the more important evolutions of what has become known as the 4% rule is the idea that you should do exactly that. So you start out at, say, age 65, and you say, I'm retiring, and I've got $1 million, and so I'm going to draw $40,000 a year. But the idea is to come and reevaluate that, do that same kind of analysis as you get older. And so basically the idea is to take the amount that you have, say, 3 years later, and look at your age, and reevaluate what a new safe withdrawal rate is given your age. And you can do that using either historical data or software tools.
Which we'll get to in a minute. Now, the other thing that I would like to stress, though, is I don't want to just base it on age. I actually want to base it on life expectancy. And, of course, I always ask, you know, I sometimes joke with people and say, how long are you going to live? And then they make a joke back. But then we actually get into some serious discussions of, well, you know, my dad was 87 when he died, or maybe he was 60, but he smoked, so we don't really know because I don't smoke. Or, well, I had this cancer, or whatever it is, in that I don't want to just strictly go with what somebody's age is. I'd rather, and for lack of a better information, I just ask the client what they think their best guess is, and I try to be conservative. So if somebody's, let's say somebody is 60, and they say, well, maybe I'll make it till 85, rather than looking at the 25-year, I might want to look at 30 or 35 just on the chance that they will survive longer than they might think.
Absolutely. Longevity, right. Longevity varies dramatically based upon, you know, your family history, how healthy you are, you know, behavioral factors. And, of course, there's also another important consideration is your bequest motive. If you really want to leave a substantial estate to your heirs, then your decisions will also be quite different than if you have less of a bequest motive.
And the other factor is that usually, assuming that we're talking about a married couple, to me, I always have to consider the longer of the two lives. So let's say for discussion's sake is the, I think it's starting to change, but let's say traditionally the husband is either the same age or older and has a shorter life expectancy, then we might gear it towards the woman's life expectancy, because we have to provide for both spouses.
Certainly.
All right. So what I thought I would do before we get into, let's say, your analysis with the Monte Carlo and what you're bringing up to it, I thought I would just tell that to people because Bill Bengen actually did come up with safe withdrawal rates for different time horizons. And what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to take a minute to go over those. And when I asked Bill, now, the analysis that Bill had was actually before the downturn in 2008 and 2009. And I said, well, would you say that still applies today? And he hedged a little bit, and he said, well, you know, I'm not sure that we can expect quite the returns that we did in the past, but at least nobody has redone them. And I think that his implication was, well, if they go down, they don't go down by much. But anyway, here they are, because I think that this is relevant for our listeners. And again, this isn't fixed in stone, and obviously a lot of people, including, by the way, you, might very strongly disagree. And I'm also not going to be further talking about something that's really important, which is to talk about the asset allocation, which I know is critical, and it's critical in your analysis. But so I'm going to skip that part, too. So I'm really skipping something that's very important. But I think rather than skipping it, I would just say what Bengen's analysis was, which was with a 10-year life expectancy, he calculated a safe withdrawal rate of 8.9%, with a 15-year life expectancy, he calculated a safe withdrawal rate of 6.3%. With a 20-year life expectancy, he calculated 5.2%. With a 25-year life expectancy, 4.7%. With a 30-year life expectancy, 4.4%. With a 35-year life expectancy, 4.3%. And a 40-year life expectancy of 4.2%. And a 45-year life expectancy of 4.1%. So he was even a tiny bit higher than 4%. But anyway, and again, you might have some disagreements with those numbers. I expect you would. But I just wanted to get the, let's say, some of the classic analysis down.
Sure.
Well, let me ask you this. Before we get into the issue of different ages, could you say, if you can, in layman's terms, what you did to analyze it, how you think that what you're doing is the next step, and then also perhaps tie that into your software, because I know we have a lot of professional and financial advisors, and we have a lot of quantitative types that like to do some of this stuff themselves, and your software might be a great tool for both of those sets of people.
Okay.
So can we start with maybe even just starting with what Monte Carlo is and then what you did with it?
Sure. Okay. So Bingen study and other historical studies take history and look at history and say, okay, starting at various points in history, how would things have turned out? And by the way, one thing that's important that I don't remember off the top of my head is in Bingen study, is he looking at a 60-40 portfolio, 60% equities, 40% bonds?
Well, what he's doing is he's actually changing the allocation as you age. So I didn't go through this, but for example, a 15-year portfolio, he had a 30% equity allocation. But for a 45-year life expectancy, he had a 65% allocation.
Right. Okay.
So he's basically increasing the percentage of fixed income as somebody ages.
Got it. Okay. So in terms of looking at periods of history, you have two limitations. One is that what happened is simply one snapshot of what's possible. And the other is we don't have really long time series of the diverse asset classes. In other words, there are asset classes for which simply weren't traded, and or for which we don't believe we have very reliable index data going back. And so the purpose of Monte Carlo simulation, as opposed to history, is to try to combine what we can get from historical data with statistical models to give a broader sense of what's possible rather than simply what happened in one trip through history. So the idea is simply to cover a broader range of what's possible than you can with a single market history. The other thing that Monte Carlo usually incorporates is some way to adjust baseline estimates of the returns that we can expect going forward. And that's one of the biggest criticisms of using pure historical data to look at survival rates, is that we have gone through a period where most researchers believe, particularly in the U.S., has delivered higher returns for equities than we should expect going forward. And there are a variety of reasons that the research shows that. One is, compared to other economies, we seem to have gotten an unfairly high or a fortunately high equity risk premium over the last 50 years or so, which is to say we've just gotten more return from equities than we should have expected. And then on the basis of fundamentals, there are fundamental models to predict the kinds of returns we should expect from equities versus less risky assets. And on that basis, we also expect that we're going to get lower returns going forward, which is probably what Mr. Bingen was referring to in terms of the way that we might revise returns downwards.
And I hate to interrupt, but if you can just go back for 1 minute, because I want to make sure that everybody's with us. You used a term that I think a lot of financial advisors are familiar with, which is equity premium, but perhaps you could explain that to our listeners.
Okay. Thanks for calling me out on that. There is an idea that equities should return more to investors because they're riskier. The idea being that risk and return go hand in hand, and so that investors should rationally expect to get higher long-term returns for taking on the risk of equities. And that is referred to as the equity risk premium, and it's usually measured relative to a risk-free asset or some very, you know, essentially risk-free assets, or a very low-risk asset like T-bills.
Which used to be risk-free.
Right. So the idea of the equity risk premium is that additional return you get from risky assets like equities that rewards you for taking on that risk. And again, in those terms, the feeling or the result from a lot of research out there is that the equity risk premium will be lower going forward than we've seen in the market as a whole over the last 50 to 60 years.
Do you have numbers for either historically or what you think is going to be the equity premium?
Now, that's a very interesting question. Actually, just today I was reviewing a new piece of research that comes out every year from Credit Suisse. And basically there are these three academics named Elroy Dimson, Paul Marsh, and Mike Staunton who go through and look at the global equity risk premiums and then estimate what they think we can expect going forward. They've actually revised their estimates down somewhat this year from last year, and they're normally pretty conservative. Basically, as a rule of thumb, I think we should probably expect, in terms of our average annual returns for equities, nominal, in other words, all in, of say 8 to 8.5% a year as the expected return. Realistically, there are probably some reasons why that might go a bit lower, but that is arithmetic. Average annual return, compound annual return will be lower than that, and that's because of volatility. But basically, for instance, in terms of my analysis, I assume a baseline of about 8%.
And I know all the engineers are going, 8%? Are you kidding? Where can you get 8%?
And again, that's nominal, not real. But in terms of the after inflation, which is the real return, of 5% for equities, given their volatility and the history, is pretty much where I see the research coming out. Although it's kind of hard to believe looking at how we've been doing in the markets lately, over the last 5 years. And it certainly could be lower. And I wrote an article years ago called The 800-Pound Gorilla of Retirement Planning. And there is no question that what you assume about the equity risk premium, about the baseline return from equities, has an enormous impact on what comes out of these calculations. If you use historical data, things will look quite rosy. If you lower the equity risk premium, things can look a lot worse fast.
Okay. All right. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. It's really an important question. It was definitely on the list of things that I wanted to make sure we got into the discussion as well.
Jim, before you move on, I think this is a good place for us to take another break. You're listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
So we were talking about Monte Carlo simulations, and why don't you finish that discussion, if you would, Jeff, and then I also want to get into some of the things that you wrote about in terms of how people can increase their safe withdrawal rate. But if you could talk about the Monte Carlo simulations and how your software ties in and what your software adds to the mix, I think our listeners would be most interested.
Okay, thanks. So the key with Monte Carlo is that, as I mentioned, first, you can expand the range of possible outcomes, which is really important to protect against the really extreme downside events. You can adjust the equity risk premium, and again, the current equity risk premium, for instance, that we use in the software as the baseline, is lower than the historical equity risk premium, which, again, most research suggests is both correct, and it also tends to lead to more conservative plans. And finally, you can do asset allocation that is much more specific than you can do using the historical data because, as I mentioned, the asset classes that are available today in very low-cost vehicles such as ETFs or index funds simply weren't available to investors over the very long sample period. And even if you have proxy data in the form of indexes that you can use to represent those asset classes, it's simply less meaningful because those were not actually traded that way back in those earlier decades. So being able to experiment with much more sophisticated asset allocations is a really powerful tool.
So I guess in one way, you have to be more conservative, taking into account other possibilities. But on the other hand, and I think one of the points of your research is if you are better diversified, that the additional safety from diversification will allow you to have a higher safe withdrawal rate. Is that fair?
That is a fair statement.
All right. All right. What does your software add to the analysis, and how might you, let's say, disagree? And, you know, I kind of ran off some numbers that, in effect, Bill Bengen did. Do you have conclusions, or is it really too much of a case-by-case basis, and that's the whole point of, or and that's one of the points of using your software? And then also if you can tell people where to get your software.
Okay. Well, in general, what I've found, and actually it's quite surprising, is the withdrawal rates on the order of 4 to 5% actually do seem to come out fairly consistently from the Monte Carlo tool, consistent with the historical analysis. And the reasons are that, on the one hand, we do have lower expected returns than we've had over long periods of history, but the greater diversification effects that we can test for and build in because of these additional asset classes that are available allow you to boost your returns relative to the risk levels you're taking on, and so those two tend to be sort of a natural offset. And so actually, as a rule of thumb, at sort of a 4-ish, a little over 4% safe withdrawal rate as a sort of just rule of thumb back of the envelope is actually remarkably good.
All right, now, I was going to ask for how many years are we talking about?
Okay.
If your baseline is 4%.
Okay. Baseline of, say, 4% for a high probability of being able to fund a 30-year retirement. Now, that doesn't mean you're guaranteed to not run out of money. In fact, the probabilities, that's for like an 80% probability of not running out of money over a 30-year retirement. So you still have a 1 in 5 chance of running out of money, which doesn't sound terribly attractive. On the other hand, and this was an important point that was raised years ago by William Bernstein, who I imagine many of your listeners are familiar with, Bill Bernstein did some of the early Monte Carlo analysis to look at retirement planning, and he makes the case that essentially we really can't do much better than, say, an 80% confidence level. And to believe that we can have, you know, like 100% confidence level of being able to fund our retirements is just unrealistic. Because even in the best situation, we simply can't understand the range of possible future outcomes that well. So his point is plan for something like an 80% probability, simply because we'd love to plan for a higher one, but there is simply always that risk of extreme events out there that you can't plan for.
All right, and let's assume for discussion's sake that we have a lot of conservative listeners out there who are fiscally conservative and say, you know something, 80% doesn't sound bad, but that means there's 20% of the time I'm not going to make it. Now, does that mean that they're going to be starving and destitute and in the street? And could you talk about the concept of changing expectations after an event? So, for example, I have a lot of clients who were planning on retiring earlier, and then after the market downturn, they said, well, I'm not going to retire. So they actually change their behavior rather than increase the risk of running out of money. And I guess the corresponding thing for somebody who is retired is that they could reconsider how much money they could spend. So could you talk about the not necessarily static model of 4 or 5%, but what people actually do. And by the way, we're starting to run out of time, and I know that I promise you that you could talk a little bit about your software. You've been really great doing pure information, but please do a quick description of your software and give people a contact information for getting it.
Okay, thanks. Well, let me I'll address the substantive issue first. One of the things that I found in my research, and a number of other people have as well, is that the most powerful way to lead towards a more successfully funded retirement is to have flexibility in your plans. As rules like the 4% rule really are contingent upon the idea that you will draw a constant income regardless of what happens, and in real life, we certainly hope that people don't do that. And that's where in the book that I wrote called Survival Guide for a Post-Pension World, I went through a series of sensitivity studies looking at how changes in behavior, such as delaying retirement or changing your income or saving more, can all really have a major impact on the probabilities of successfully funding retirement. And so, no, that will certainly improve things. And, in fact, that's the most powerful tool that most people have at their disposal, is changes in behavior both before and in retirement. The sort of staying power of the 4% rule is simply that it is a simple guideline and rule of thumb. Hopefully, people do more detailed and specific analysis both before retirement and during retirement, and that's a lot of what the tools I developed are for.
All right, and why don't you tell people, because we're really going to run out of time soon,
okay.
why don't you just say, okay, I'm going to quit being, give people such excellent substance, and I'm just going to talk a little bit about my software, because I think that, frankly, it might be very interesting, particularly for some of the financial professionals mm-hmm. and for some of the quantitative-type engineers and physicists and other quantitative types, and I know that we have a lot of them in our audience.
Okay. All right, well, thanks. Well, thank you. So now's my opportunity to give my plug.
That's it.
Quantext Portfolio Planner is the software that I developed. You can learn about it at quantext.com. Mm-hmm. That's quantext.com. You can apply for and download a free trial and try out all the bells and whistles. And it helps you to build a portfolio out of real funds, ETFs, and individual stocks. Then it will do Monte Carlo simulations on your real portfolio. And then project risk and retirement survival rates given whether you're pre- or post-retirement and given your savings rates and what your expected draw rates are in retirement.
Okay. Again, can you give that contact information one more time?
Yeah. Sure. It's www.quantext.com, quantext.com.
Wonderful. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us. This was Dr. Jeff Considine again. His website, www.quantext.com, Quantext.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
We had a great show tonight. You can always reach us at the office, 412-521-2732 and retiresecure.com.
And I actually have one other quick note.
Sure.
That if people are interested in the safe withdrawal rate and they wanted to hear what Bill Bengen said,
mm-hmm.
That is actually on our archives. Mm-hmm. If you go to retiresecure.com, and click on Listen Now, you can listen to the let's call it the classic safe withdrawal guy, which is Bill Bengen, and it's basically an hour-long show.
Yeah, absolutely. All of our shows are posted on retiresecure.com, all of our archives, and we also have the transcripts on there too. So if you like to read better than listen, feel free to download those whenever you'd like. Again, thank you very much for listening to the Lang Money Hour. Have a great evening.
Thanks for listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. Check out our show archives and listen on demand anytime at retiresecure.com. KQV listeners, you can receive free tickets to Jim Lang's Pittsburgh area workshops and more. Call the Lang Financial Group at 412-521-2732. That's 412-521-2732 to reserve your seats and meet Jim Lang in person. Again, that's 412-521-2732. The Lang Money Hour's executive producer is Nicole DiMartino for the Lang Financial Group on KQV Pittsburgh.